Chapter 10 Divine Seed. Fabius stood in the remains of his first great laboratorium and looked on the ruins of centuries of work. Cracked containment cylinders bled coolant and nutrient waste across the floor and walls, as sickly strands of cloned flesh stretched like creeper vines through the canopy of rusted power conduits and fiber bundles. He removed his helmet and sucked in a lungful of mouldering air. The faintest traces of old experiments were discernible even now. The chemical stink had permeated the stone so thoroughly that not even the fires of destruction could fully scour them clean. Eidolon had given him leave to plunder through his old haunts, seeking anything that might yet be of value. He'd hoped there would be something, given the wealth of knowledge and raw material he'd been forced to abandon, but precious little remained. Time and scavengers had picked the bones clean. He descended into the depths of the great building alone. He had no doubt Eidolon had someone watching him, in some fashion, but the sensor baffles he'd installed in his power armor would take care of any prying artificial eyes. While outwardly his battle plate was still the same ceramite he'd worn on the killing fields of Istvan and Terra, inwardly it had seen much augmentation. Beyond the enhanced sensory array and the baffle filters, there were any number of odds and ends, including one that was the direct result of his recent studies into Eldar technology. Idly, he tapped the stud of circular metal set into his brow. While it resembled nothing more than an antiquated service stud, it was in actuality a neural buffer. Every few moments, it copied his neural patterns, all that made him him, and remotely uploaded them to the databanks in his laboratorium. In such a way, his knowledge and personality were preserved in the event of misfortune. With a sigh, he pulled his helmet back on. He would need sensor feed to identify and locate anything of value that might yet remain. As the visual feed flickered to life, he turned, examining his surroundings in greater detail. The reinforced superstructure of the facility had survived the impact of Abaddon's spear, but only just. Massive cracks ran through every flat surface, and most of the machinery had shorted out instantly. That which hadn't had puttered on for a few decades before finally succumbing to neglect and power loss. Clone tanks lined one wall, their contents slumped at the bottom of each. He wandered down the line, studying rotting husks huddled in their own liquid effluvia. The ident scanner built into his vambrace whirred and pinged as it read the binaric code etched into the faceplate of every tank. The clones had been grown from samples taken from 1,000 key figures in the Imperial hierarchy. Key figures at the time, at least. Iterators, senior administratum staff, division heads of the Estate Imperium, and even a few senior officers of the Militarum Tempestus. The samples had been provided by agents of the Lernaean proxies, accompanied by certain neural wetware to be implanted before the decanting process had begun. Mass-produced double agents to better serve Alpharius, or a reasonable facsimile thereof. "I am Alpharius," he murmured and chuckled. It was a given that all of the sons of the Hydra were Alpharius. It was just a shame that Alpharius had proven himself to be so dull. Whatever else, Fulgrim never committed the sin of vacuity, never tried to stamp us in a mould of his own making. The destruction of the clones had precipitated the breakdown of his once cordial relations with the representatives of the Alpha Legion. Another thing to thank Abaddon for, if they ever crossed paths again. And not just the Alpha Legion. He turned, spying canisters of long-rotted gene seed stolen from the recruiting worlds of the World Eaters in some forgotten raid. He could not recall what he had been planning to do with it. Something more practical than its original owners intended, no doubt. He paused suddenly and turned back. Something was missing. Several somethings, in fact. Machinery far too cumbersome to be carted off by scavengers. Not fully, at any rate. He cycled through sensor frequencies as his gaze followed a series of conduits. They were still active, but where was the power going? Curious, he followed the conduits as they devolved into crudely spliced cables, all leading further down. There were thousands of kilometers of access tunnels beneath the city, many of them once occupied by the machinery necessary to keep an urban center of such mammoth proportions functioning. Recalling the loose flesh he'd seen bubbling up through the streets, he wondered what might have taken them over since the city's destruction.
"Only one way to find out, I suppose," he murmured.
The hatchways to the access tunnels were right where he'd left them. The last time he'd used them, the tunnels had been full of his creations, seeking vain refuge from the coming enemy. He could still recall the stink of their fear and the howling as he and his bodyguards had fought their way to the underground teleportarium he'd had the foresight to design and maintain. Now it was empty, save for shadows and filth. Broken bones littered the narrow corridors, and burst chem dispensers and fried power cables dangled from the cracked ceiling high overhead. The locking mechanisms of the security bulkheads had been cooked in the electromagnetic death knell of the shattered Talok, leaving most of them open. Those that weren't had been shattered, or simply torn loose from the walls. Bulkheads were only as impassable as the walls they occupied. The stab lights of his armor flickered to life, sweeping the darkness. A grid map of the tunnel system surfaced from the data core of his armor, overlaying the visual feed. His sensors locked onto the tangle of active supply cables, and he followed them. As he traversed the tunnels, he saw that the junction nodes and bleed-off points had all been cracked open and spliced into the central conduit, so that every last erg of energy was flowing to the same source. The deeper he went, the harder it was for his senses to penetrate the surrounding walls. It was as if something were actively interfering with them. When the first whisper slid across his vox, he was not surprised. He had been expecting it, in a way. It was possible that the Harlequins had tracked him to Harmony. There were few places the alien clowns couldn't go, if they were of a mind. Even demon worlds were no obstacle to them, mad as they were. And the narrative lure of his current undertaking was too strong for such creatures to resist. A man alone in the dark of a forgotten ruin, seeking the answer to a mystery. Of course there would be monsters. He stopped at a fourfold junction and hefted torment, waiting.
"The king! Oh, the king! He descended into the underworld, blade in hand."
The junction was a baroque crossroads, littered with grotesque ornamentation. Leering faces crowded above vaulted arches, and long silent voxcasters sat in the stone jaws of hideous gargoyle shapes. The stripped, silent carcasses of four servitors still occupied their alcoves, their darkened optical sensors fixed on something only the dead could see.
"He descended, the king, to challenge the crone on her dark throne."
He didn't recognize the voice as it slipped and slid into and out of audibility. It did not sound like the Shadow Seer, Veilwalker. The voice was less a giggle than a growl, though that meant little where such creatures were concerned. He had long suspected that Veilwalker was not individual, but many, a title rather than a name, a choice role played by many actors. He turned, slowly boosting his senses, trying to pinpoint the source of the signal.
"If you wish to talk, talk, but spare me your attempts at poetry."
"The king stumbled through the dark land of death, seeking that which no blade could defeat, no command could sway."
"I grow weary of this. Reveal yourselves or be silent."
Fabius swung torment out in a loose arc. The artifact snarled, filling the air with red light. A shape, undetected by his senses, twitched back, out of sight. Fabius tensed. It had not been a Harlequin, or at least unlike any Harlequin he had ever seen. A moment later, he heard something laugh close at hand. He spun, torment raised. Only the clop of hooves on stone awaited him. A Neverborn, perhaps. Harmony was rife with them.
"Where did you hear that song?" he asked.
"From a friend."
"Who are you?"
Silence.
"Melusine," he murmured, as a sudden suspicion flared. "Is that you?"
More laughter, like that of a child, delighted at the trick it has played on its parent. Fabius snarled in frustration. I grew tired of these games 1,000 years ago. Whatever you are, Neverborn or Eldari or something else entirely, know that you are trying my patience. Did you lure me down here merely to spit gibberish at me?
Not gibberish, but a story, a story, a story. Tell me a story, Fabius.
Fabius twitched his head in annoyance.
I do not know any stories.
A lie! A lie! You are made of stories, King of Feathers, Father of Monsters, Clone Lord and Primogenitor. Every name a story, every story a name.
Then perhaps I simply have no patience for indulging a mysterious voice. Speak plainly or not at all.
Fabius turned, casting his lights in every nook and crack. Nothing moved save particles of dust, disturbed by his passage.
Your story is one of damnation and salvation, forwards and backwards.
The unseen presence sang, causing his voice to crackle painfully.
Who will you save? Who will you kill?
Only those I must, Fabius said. That is all I have ever done. What I must, when I must. If I have a god, let it be necessity, for that is what guides my footsteps.
Sensors swept the broken tunnels, delivering a recalibrated three-dimensional map to his display. Pulses of warmth drew near to his position. Something was coming. The chirurgeon clattered in alarm as something touched his arm. He spun, torment slashing out to pulverize a sagging pillar. There was nothing there, only the fading echo of a laugh. He cycled through the sensor frequencies, trying to isolate the signal that intruded on his vox.
Why don't you stop singing and come out with it? What do you want?
No answer. His helmet feed sparked with static. Strange shadow shapes seemed to bleed out of the walls and floor for a moment, before vanishing as swiftly as they'd come. The shapes had no substance, no solidity, but he tensed regardless. He flexed his hand, ready to draw his needler at an instant. Steam seeped from broken pipes and boiled up from melting patches of coolant, obscuring the path directly ahead of him. For a moment, he thought he saw something dancing within its folds, but as the steam cleared, the shape was revealed to be nothing more than a trick of the light, or perhaps his own overwrought senses. Loose stone shifted. He turned more slowly this time, controlling the kill instinct. He lifted Torment and pointed the scepter at the hunched shape that had sought to take him unawares. It shied back with a whine. A mutant wrapped in concealing rags. It waved bandaged paws at him as if begging for mercy. More of them crept out of the darkness, crawling towards him, eyes reflecting his lights. Slowly, he removed his helmet. At the sight of his face, they abased themselves. The first one gabbled at him in a semi-coherent pidgin. He recognized the babble and replied in kind. More than their babble was familiar. His scanners picked out certain markers among the cacophony of their genetic melange. The mutants were the descendants of those he'd selected to serve as his assistants. The genetic markers were obvious to his eyes. In the centuries since the destruction of Canticle City, they'd obviously fled into the depths and bred down in the dark. Inured as they were to pain and hardship, they might even have thrived, in a sense. But only for a time. He could smell the stink of septic wounds and the brittle tang of fear. Once Harmony's old masters had returned, they would have become nothing more than prey without his protection. Wild mutants were hunted by the legions for sport and food. They caught at his hands, attempting to lead him down a side corridor. He hesitated, but only for a moment. They meant him no harm. Indeed, it was beyond their capacity to even consider such a thing. He had implanted certain safeguards in their ancestors, safeguards they had passed down to their descendants. He followed them deeper into the tunnels. More of them came out of hiding to greet him, or to simply stare in wonder. Twisted paws reached out to touch the fleshy folds of his coat. Malformed faces gazed at him in adulation. Some of them had begun to sing in broken voices that echoed eerily in the cramped spaces.
Ave pater mutatis,
they crooned, lifting squalling infant things up to him, as if to receive benediction. And he gave it to them, brushing his hands over the squirming, fleshy shapes that squealed and wept. Even after all of this time, they worshipped him. The walls of the tunnels were covered in crude paintings. He recognized himself, captured in blood and oil, rising over indistinct, huddled masses like some great protective spider. He smiled thinly. The mutants led him down, through winding hand-carved tunnels that branched off from the square access corridors like tumors. The air grew thick and rank, and lumen light gave way to more primitive forms of illumination. Fires burned in out-of-the-way tunnels, and long shadows capered on the walls. There were hundreds of nooks and crannies dug into the rugose walls, a necropolis of bones and bits of scavenged technology, none of it salvageable. The pirated lines of power cabling crawled across the walls and ceiling, spliced together with more enthusiasm than skill. Occasionally, sparks spattered down, cascading across his armor to dance across the uneven floor. He was led through a series of ragged curtains made from body shrouds and rotting skins and into a deep chamber. The chamber was filled with banks of salvaged flesh vats and cloning tanks, arranged like statues in a primordial temple. He knew them all by sight. Somehow the mutants had managed to bring them down into the tunnels. Things writhed and thumped within some of the tanks, their forms hidden by soured nutrient gel. Jaws with too many teeth pressed against reinforced glass, like welcoming smiles. Fabius strode down the nave of monsters, his attentions drawn to the humming bio-unit which occupied the altar point. He recognized it for what it was immediately. He'd had 20 of them constructed, according to a very specific set of criteria. One for each of the Emperor's sons. It had taken him centuries to acquire the necessary genetic material for such an endeavor. He had consigned entire systems to the cauldron of war just for a splash of old blood on a ragged cloth or a bit of scrimshawed bone.
"And I would do it again," he said.
His voice echoed in the cavernous chamber. The mutants sank down with a sigh, their faces pressed to the floor.
"I would do it all again. And better."
He stopped and turned, studying his skewed reflection in a clone tank, delaying the inevitable. A mouldering skeleton drifted within, bound in a web of calcified nutrient hoses.
"I could have saved us, if only they'd listened. Our fathers abandoned us, but I could have brought them back, made them whole, sane, healthy. We could have stepped back from the brink, shed ourselves of the weight of our sins. The Great Crusade could have begun again, as if it had never been interrupted."
Even as he said the words, he knew them for a lie. It had been nothing more than a dream. A last, desperate attempt to rectify all that had gone wrong. A necessary failure. It had shown him once and for all that there was no going back. The Great Crusade was over, and mankind was condemned to burn in a pyre of its own ignorance. He pressed his hand to the glass, studying his face. Not hollow with fatigue and pain. Not yet. That would come soon enough.
I was the last crusader, and this was my city on the hill, the pinnacle of renewal, cast down by barbarians. The banner of science, trod into the dust of ages by the boots of brute ignorance.
He felt a stab of pain, not physical, but almost spiritual, an ache where his soul might have been, if he believed in such things. His reflection seemed to smile at him. The vox in his helmet crackled. He glanced down at it. When he looked back, it was not his face reflected in the greasy glass, but something else. He turned, but whatever it was not there. He could hear someone, something, singing, distantly, dimly, either far away or close by and quietly. Another trick. Another trap. A nearby generator groaned, as if on the point of cessation. He followed the sound to the final tank, occupying the end of the makeshift nave. The altar stone of this primitive temple. Had he been led here just to find this? It was one of the ones he'd been forced to leave behind, and still functioning somehow, thanks to the stolen power.
It is the nature of this universe that the old must give way before the new, he said softly. All that was will be washed away, as the sands are taken by the sea. But some old things yet remain, unchanging and unchangeable, stubborn as the rock itself.
Wonderingly, he touched the condensation-slick surface of the nutrient vat. He rubbed the excess moisture away and jerked his hand back as the thing within shifted restlessly in its slumber and turned two perfect features towards him. He was pale, not in an unhealthy way, but like unpainted marble. Tiny, sturdy limbs tucked against a narrow chest. There was a hint of violet beneath shuttered eyelids, and the thin hair on his head was as white as snow. A perfect infant, several months old, healthy and strong. Fabius hissed in recognition.
Fulgrim, he murmured.
He wiped more condensation from the reinforced glass. That the infant Primarch still persisted after all this time was all but impossible. He glanced down and saw that somehow the mutants had jury-rigged the power supply unit, hooking it directly to the mains. It was not getting much power, but just enough to keep the system running.
No wonder you haven't matured, Fabius said softly. It's all they can do to keep you alive.
He turned back to the mutants. The creatures were still kneeling in worship, still murmuring their hymns to his benevolence. He felt a flicker of something that might have been pity. They had held faith with him, even after all this time.
But alive you are.
The power supply groaned again, sparks dancing along the salvaged cables. The tank flickered. It was dying. He thought he knew now why he had been led here, to witness the end of his creation's futile efforts at preserving his legacy. He stepped back, uncertain. The nutrient gel began to darken as oxygen seeped from it, and the filters that kept it sterile began to fail one by one. The infant within began to twitch and thrash as it slowly suffocated. It would be dead in moments if power wasn't restored. Good. It had lived too long already. He turned away, not wanting to see. It was the past. He could not go back. Not now. Even so, he did not wish to see the death of a dream. There was no satisfaction in this. Simply an ending, long overdue.
What is a kingdom without a king?
The voice hissed from the vox in his helmet, each word sinking into him like a blade.
What is an army without a leader?
Torment whined in his grip.
What are sons without the father?
The chirurgeon clicked as it detected a rise in his heart rate.
What is a dreamer without the dream?
Fabius snarled and spun. Torment lashed out with a shriek of parting air. Reinforced glass cracked and burst as fouling solutions spewed from it. The tank emptied swiftly, and Fabius braced himself amid the noisome torrent. The infant was carried towards him on a wave of effluvia. He caught the half-awaked child gently, cushioning its fragile form against his chest. Fabius looked down at his burden. Dark, violet eyes gazed up at him, empty of all save innocent wonder. The baby was filthy, but still beautiful. That had been one of Fulgrim's gifts, to look his best, even at his worst. Tiny hands clutched at him, seeking comfort. Fabius frowned and shook his head.
What now? He murmured.
Fulgrim's only reply was a wordless murmur of contentment.